Hey, I'm Josh Taylor. You're listening to Knotcraft, a podcast about all of the soft skills that you need in your design career to be successful. For this week's episode, we have Luisa Mancera, who's worked at small startups, some world-class design agencies with companies like Apple and Google, and is now at Envision. We'll also talk a little bit about how she got started with her own agency down in Mexico. It's going to be a really good one. I think you're going to really like it. But before we get started, let's talk real quickly about how you can help the show. So you can go over to iTunes and rate the show. I'd appreciate that, especially if you like it. Or you can go to patreon.com/knotcraftpodcast and become a member there and support us. So I've set up a pretty fun little gift for you if you do that. I think that these episodes are going to be really interesting as far as yielding some pretty helpful tips that apply to people even outside of the design space. So much so that I'm going to see if they apply to my kids. So I have two little daughters that are 6 and 8 years old. They're really cool. And I've taken a little bit of time to sit down with them and try to explain some of these episodes and explain some of these same lessons to them, because I hope that they can learn some of these things themselves. I think they're really applicable to a lot of different people. And I hope that they kind of grow up learning a lot of these things that that I think are so important. So I've sat down and done that with them. If nothing else, it's actually just a little bit funny to hear a dad try to explain to his 6-year-old and 8-year-old some things that they sometimes care about and sometimes don't care about. It's a lot of fun. So feel free to go over there. That's patreon.com/knotcraftpodcast and support me. I'd love your support there and join and be part of the Knotcraft crew. But with that said, we're going to jump straight in, right into talking to Luisa, and I hope you enjoy this one. Luisa, you were at Road Trippers. Then you moved out to the Bay Area. You joined up with Bueno.
Mm-hmm.
Spent a while with them. I think that was from everything I know, it was an awesome experience for you and a lot of great experience working with different clients. And then you joined Envision not too long ago.
A year ago. Exactly a year.
Which is awesome. It's the vortex. Just keep sucking people in. But you were kind of leading on that. So you joined before a lot of other people, which is awesome. And then before that, you said you started a studio in Mexico City.
Yeah, that was when I started doing design full time.
Wait, you started a studio as your foray?
It doesn't make a lot of sense. I had freelanced a bit and I hated my job. I was working as like a junior research analyst at a small consulting company. And my cousin, who was a freelance designer studying design, just had too much work basically and was like, why don't you quit your job and team up with me and you can take on my extra work? And then it was I was like 24. It was also kind of our way of just like, I don't want to have a boss. Like working full time sucks. I want to go to the beach. My grandma had a spare room, so we used that as an office for the first 6 months.
That's so awesome. I love the like start off at the like agency. We're going to start an agency.
I will also say the bar in Mexico is lower.
Okay.
Like I don't think I would not have been able to do that in a place like San Francisco, having zero experience.
Got it.
Mexico was like, if we delivered on time, that already kind of set us apart from the pack.
Look, we do stuff when we say we're going to do it.
Exactly.
That's awesome. I feel like just digging into experience of designing in Mexico City would be amazing in and of itself.
It's challenging. People, you have to like chase people for what you need.
Got it.
And kind of like figure out how to balance, like you kind of have to micromanage people, but they can't feel like you're micromanaging them.
Do they want to feel like they're in charge of the project and they're kind of having you do what they want, or what's the vibe?
I don't know. I mean, I think I never fully figured it out, which is kind of why I left, because I was just so frustrated trying to make it work. And I hated having to chase people down. I trusted that if somebody said, I'll send you this tomorrow, that they would send it. And they never did. And and there was also always like a power dynamic at play that I've never really understood or known how to navigate, because I grew up mostly outside of Mexico.
Got it.
And so I don't know how to answer the question, because if I had the answer, I probably would still be running the studio.
If you would have started and knew exactly what to do.
Exactly.
So then you went to Cincinnati. So you've got family in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Family in Mexico, and you spend a lot of time between the two.
Yeah. So I mainly grew up in Cincinnati, and I had left for 10 years. Part of those 10 years were spent in Mexico City, and then I moved back to Cincinnati for 2 years.
Got it. And then Bay Area, Oakland, because Oakland's where it's at.
Well, actually, I first was in San Francisco for 2 years.
And then you saw the light.
And then I saw the light, and now I've been in Oakland for a year.
This is awesome.
And I love it.
We're converting people. Cool. Let's kind of jump right in. So the format of the show, for those that don't know, is two lessons and a warning. So we'll keep it really short. A couple things that Luis has learned over the last few years, starting with her own design studio and freelancing and kind of moving through a handful of different environments. And then something that you'd also kind of say to some designers as a warning, like maybe don't go down that route. or let's see what you have. So why don't we kind of jump right in. Lesson number one.
I think this like immediately came to mind, and I had trouble actually even thinking of anything else to say. But for me, I would say like the golden rule has been just to make friends with people, and especially clients. I think if you're working in house, I would say like make friends with your coworkers. If you're working at an agency or like more client facing, make friends with your clients. But I think it was a really good, when I was at Weno, I worked for a year and a half on a project with a company called Articulate. They were all awesome. They were like super easy to make friends with, but you know, there are always like these tense moments or disagreements. And the fact that like, I think I just had naturally had kind of a good relationship with them that I had intentionally built over time made it really easy to resolve things in those moments of tension. And I feel like they trusted me a lot because of the relationship that we had. So like when we had two design options that were kind of like equal in terms of pros and cons, and it was really just a matter of like, which one do we want to do? I could just make like an executive decision. And I feel like it saved all of us a ton of time and a ton of like, where I think that tension that builds, like it really wears down relationships a lot. And then you just don't want to work with people anymore, and kind of everything they do pisses you off.
Right.
So like the more that you can maintain just a healthy, normal, natural, close relationship with people, the easier the work stuff is. And especially when it's like a tricky moment.
Yeah, that's awesome. You, and it feels like very you.
Well, I grew up in the Midwest, so I think it's like the natural, you know, it's just like my mom makes friends with people in the grocery line all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like always, like just always be making friends with people. It's a great way for us to just kind of establish a new baseline with them.
Right.
Were those people, so I mean, I honestly think that a lot of designers in particular are relatively good at making friends with other designers. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like these weren't designers.
No.
And these are a lot of like non-designers and kind of establishing a shared relationship with them.
Yeah.
Or a shared vocabulary.
I mean, if anything, I feel like I'm probably better at the opposite. I think I'm less interested in getting to know designers because I make the false assumption that we're all the same. And I'm like, I already know all those people. I'm not that curious about them. But like, these are new people who do something totally different. And so there is like that innate curiosity for me. But with like developers, for example, in the Bay Area, some of them can be difficult sometimes to like just figure out how to talk to them. And one thing that normally works really well if they have kids is just be like, oh, so how old are your kids? Are they in school yet? Is it a boy or a girl? Like, are they doing something cool this summer? Just asking about kids is like the easiest kind of opener. And
wait, this is, now I'm seeing a side. I knew it. It was a trick. This is why this, I will speak from experience. This is where it's like, people love to talk about their kids.
Exactly. And so you're flattering them. Yeah. They feel like you're interested in their life. It's like a really easy generic topic that if they have kids, you can talk to them about it.
Right. And you just, all you have to do is like tee it up.
Yeah.
I've used that same thing to break the ice with developers actually before. It's like, oh, you have kids. Show me pictures.
Yep.
And then once they get the phone out, then like, you're friends.
If they don't have kids and it's like a really awkward developer. I don't know.
You got to find a way.
Yeah.
You got to find a way. That's super interesting.
Well, or not. I think part of it too is that like you can't force it. Like you can't try and like create a friendship where there's no ground for one.
That's true.
Or like not even necessarily friendship, but just like, you know, a kind of organic relationship. Mm.
It also feels a lot like you just like, I think you said that you also have worked in and really enjoy working in a lot of small environments and small teams where you get to build those relationships.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's the thing that you really value, which I think is really, really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I would say like, if I'm looking at jobs or evaluating, you know, where I want to go, there's like what the product is or what the company sells. And then there's the team. And for me, the team is always number one. Mm. Like the people I'm going to spend all day, every day working with.
Right.
For me is the most important thing because I'm super social and I like nice people and I'm like curious and interested in people.
Yeah. That's awesome. Cool. I love that. So make friends.
Make friends.
Make friends wherever you go.
Well, and because, and I think also like when I was at Weno, there was sometimes almost like an antagonistic relationship between designer and client, or I think that's just something that kind of happens sometimes with client facing work. And Hallie, the creative director, I think just is like, he, I don't know if this is intentional on his part or if it just comes really naturally, but it's always this attitude of like, we're trying to solve this problem together. Like you and I are on the same side.
Right.
And so kind of reframing the relationship that way was really, really helpful for me.
Right.
To no longer feel like, oh, if I can't figure this out, I'm approaching a client and I've already failed because I don't know the answer and they're paying me for the answer. So to reframe it that way was like, oh, they're not paying me for the answer. They're paying me to just like think it through because they're spending their time doing something else. And so it's okay to approach them and say, hey, I'm kind of stuck here. This is what I'm thinking. Do you have any more information that maybe I'm unaware of that can like unlock whatever this problem is?
Right. Which is so huge. As somebody that's been on the other side of that with Weno, with Hallie, I appreciate that a ton because I hate the relationships where it's like they take the work and then they go into a black box for a while and then they come back with something, only to realize that they never had enough context to make smart decisions in the first place. And I really wish they would have been more collaborative and just said, hey, we don't really know what's going on here. Is there something else?
Right. Which I think is actually like to contrast working in like a creative field in Mexico was really different than working, I would say in the US, but especially in the Bay Area. Like in Mexico, I'd get calls at 9 o'clock on a Friday night saying, hey, I need this for tomorrow from clients. And you as the service provider are basically just, you're like the hired hand.
Got it.
And you kind of have to just like leave whatever you're doing, go home and send it to them. Cause otherwise they're going to fire you. And it was such a shift for me to move here. And I think the first project I worked on was for Google. And I remember them asking me, how much time do you need? Like, oh, when will you send us stuff? I said, I don't know. And like, I'll have these screens done in a couple of days. Is that all right? And I said, oh yeah, just let us know if you need more time.
You're like the opposite of what you're
exact doing. Opposite. And I was just like, what? Like they respect my time. They respect me. And it wasn't that they saw, I realized they don't see me as a service provider. They see me as like a partner in this project. Mm. And so I think making that shift also changed a lot about around like my approach, I guess, with the power dynamic at play between like client and designer and realizing that I think when you feel like you're on more equal footing, you're just more relaxed and more comfortable and are more willing to say, hey, I don't know the answer. Can you help me? Than if you feel like you're trying to prove yourself because you're somehow less than they are.
That's awesome. So that idea of making friends really kind of helps cut through a power dynamic too.
Yeah.
Whether it be a client relationship or with developers or, you know, any other type of relationship, it kind of puts you on level footing.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Especially, I mean, with Weno, for example, like we would, I mean, they still do this. I don't work there anymore, but you're kind of like embedded into the company as either an extension of their design team or functioning as the design team if they don't have one. And that can get tricky. Like you don't want to be stepping on people's toes. You never know what kind of office politics you're walking into. And I think you know, having these new designers around that are all of a sudden like telling you what to do, and maybe your boss is paying more attention to them than they are to you, mm-hmm. can make someone feel pretty insecure, understandably. And so to make friends with that person and have them see you as an ally and not as someone that's just like, you know, out to like prove them wrong or something is also really helpful.
Yeah.
And not only helpful, but also just like makes the whole thing more enjoyable for everyone.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it helps the process, but then I think, like you said, like then you end up with people that you like working with.
Right.
And that you want to work with again.
Right.
Not just because you made awesome stuff, but because like, that was enjoyable. I liked that.
Yeah.
Cool. I love that. So make friends. I think we can work on that. Awesome. What's next?
This is definitely more geared towards junior designers, but one of the most helpful lessons I learned from one of my old coworkers, Carolyn at Weno. I was walking someone through a presentation that we were doing at Apple. I was walking them through wireframes and I was really nervous. Like I'd never really presented before and it was just the two of us. And I think, you know, it was my first project working at like a real agency in San Francisco. And as I was walking, kind of the guy from Apple who was like the businessman running the project, I was walking through the wireframes and I was doing about as good of a job then as I am now in explaining this, which was very poor. I just kept referring to things as things. Like, you know, this, instead of saying, oh, this CTA, if you click the CTA, it'll take you over to this next screen, which is where you do whatever. And like describing it with real words, I just kept saying, and if you click here, then it'll do this thing, and kind of with these filler words, cause I didn't know what to call anything. Mm. And in my mind, I was like, I just got to San Francisco. I'm working in quote unquote real tech for the first time. Mm. And there are words for these things that I don't know what those words are. So afterwards, Carolyn said like, hey, can I give you some feedback on your presentation? Please. Cause I was just sweating and I knew it was terrible. Yeah. And she said, just make it up. Like nobody knows, there are no assigned names for any of these things. So just make up a word, because if you make up a word, then they're going to say, oh, that's what that's called. And then they're going to start calling it that. But if you don't know, then you're just kind of fumbling your way through it. And it comes off as just being very unpolished. And like, then no one's going to believe you because you don't know what you're talking about. And it's, you know, you could get into the whole like imposter syndrome and.
Sure. But I think that like, that's like, you have to make it up. I mean, at a certain point, you're right. Like nobody else knows better, or they'll correct you if they do.
And I mean, even now there are many times where I will just say, I don't know what this thing is called. Let's just call it this. And a thing just needs a name so that you can have a conversation about it. It doesn't have to be like a precise term that is, you know, accurate in like the dictionary of tech terms. So yeah, I think her kind of giving, that was like really, really valuable feedback for me at the time on kind of, I hadn't realized the importance of speaking eloquently about what you're presenting as you're presenting it, which now is kind of like a duh thing.
Right.
But
is that, I also hear in there like be specific.
Yeah.
Rather than kind of saying, well, you know, click on the thing and I'll take you over here. And then when you scroll down, you'll see more stuff.
Yeah.
So like words like thing and stuff and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you're saying too?
It is. And I think learning how to, and I've found this to be true in probably all parts of my life, not just design, but learning how to be precise in the way that we use language helps us also internalize and better understand whatever it is that we're talking about. Mm. And having a more organized, clean mind, almost like finding the words. It's like you're organizing your mind at the same time. And then all of a sudden you have kind of a clarity about this idea that you're talking to someone about. Mm.
Do you feel now, if you were to go back to that same Apple presentation, is that something that you would kind of really practice on figuring out some of those words in advance? Or is that kind of a, just like, as you're going, just don't think about it too much. Just kind of,
I mean, at the time, maybe. I think I was probably nervous. I was probably talking really quickly and I didn't realize that I could just pause for a second and just figure it out. And I think, you know, when we feel pressured to come up with something, you're just for me at least, some people maybe freeze, but I just like spew words.
Right. You just keep talking.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah, I do the same thing. I do this to keep talking thing, but I've also realized that I do the way I learn about it, like you said, is by processing and by talking it through. Sometimes if it's an important thing, I'll intentionally, like as soon as I have a glimpse of an idea, I just go talk to people, because when I'm talking it out loud, then I find the words. And then the first time through, it was like I was stumbling over my words. And then like I'll go over and tell like somebody else about the idea, and then I'll go tell somebody else. And every time I tell them, like my narrative's getting better because I'm finding better words, or they're seeing where I pause and they're giving me a word. And then they're like injecting a thing, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Oh,
I think that's like, true. I totally agree with you, but I also think you need to know who you can practice with and who you can't. And if it's a 60-year-old man in a button-down shirt that's tucked in, and he's wearing, you know, he's like this very buttoned-up guy, and he works at Apple, and like, I don't know, he makes a lot of money, and his time is expensive. He's not someone that I want to be practicing on. Like, he's someone that I want to come out as being very polished.
Yeah, you want to be done with that one. I love that you described him as a businessman, by the way.
I know.
There was an Apple businessman.
Speaks to my like total lack of understanding about how companies actually work and like what everybody else does.
That's awesome.
He probably carries a briefcase.
Yeah, of course. Cool. That's awesome. I love that one too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's, I go to this meditation group once in a while in Berkeley. And the thing I like the best about the guy that runs the group is that he has this really incredible ability to describe really tricky concepts in a really approachable way. Mm-hmm. And I've thought about it a lot. And he's very precise with his words and mm-hmm. like specific. And so he kind of gives the feeling that every word that he's saying was like chosen. Mm. It wasn't just a knee jerk, you know, consequence. I don't know. It didn't just come out. And I think the more we hone our ability to do that, the more credible we're going to be. So if you're talking about like a work situation where I'm assuming most people want to be credible,
right,
and have people trust them,
I love that idea of them, like the every word feels chosen. I think that's when it just feels like it's the difference between, that's when it's like making it up, or, you know, I think you can see like the slope into imposter syndrome.
Right.
But I mean, yeah, you're sitting there and you're talking and you're just kind of saying things, and now you're rambling and it's going on and on, versus like somebody that just came in and said, here's what it is and here's what it does. And this is the exact thing that you can expect after it's done, and then the user will be in this state.
Yeah.
You could be wrong.
And that comes with experience,
right,
to be able to, but I think you need to start off first, just get comfortable improvising and realizing that everybody's making it up.
Right.
And I know we all say that.
Right.
And so it sounds dumb, but it's true.
Right.
And so, yeah, I guess first get comfortable just making the words up as you're saying them. And then, I mean, I felt that shift in myself over the 2 years that I worked at Weno. From the time that I started, that meeting was like a week after I started, to the time that I left, just in my ability to be able to, you know, show people my work and walk them through it. And especially in that kind of thing where it's this very informal client is standing behind you and you're just showing them like your progress for the afternoon.
That's interesting.
And so, yeah, I think it's definitely the more experience you have, just the more comfortable you are, and the more it comes off as being kind of selected and like less half-assed, right, basically.
More selected, less half-assed, but also practice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think the more you do it, the better you get at it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Like everything.
Like everything else. Well, I mean, also like being designers, we, isn't our whole thing to make stuff up? I mean, in a
true
way,
yeah.
In a way, that's why you're being paid, is to make stuff up. And
yeah,
I think we get really uncomfortable. You're like, I don't know, I just like made that up. You're like, yeah, somebody paid you to do that.
Right. Well, I think it kind of, the comfort zone, and I do this, and I've seen a lot of my coworkers doing this, where our comfort zone is like to sit down by yourself at the computer and like, oh, I'm just going to figure this out by myself. And then when we have to kind of re-engage the world, it can become really uncomfortable, which again, if you're friends with the people you're working with, it's going to feel more comfortable. And I think anything we can do to kind of overcome those like small social anxieties is it just really helpful in like being more comfortable talking about it and like developing kind of all of these soft skills.
It's like creating your own safe space.
Yeah, basically. I guess I moved a lot as a kid, so maybe I just, that comes really naturally to me.
Make friends, make a place where you feel safe.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Cool. All right. Hit me with a warning. What should we as designers not do or avoid or start thinking about more critically?
I think my warning, again, will probably sound very cliche, but when I was a junior designer, I would take everything super personally. If my boss didn't like my work, I would, like, one time I literally went to the bathroom and started crying. Because, and we just, again, this was like, I didn't have the language to present my ideas in a way that made him trust them, even though I knew they were good ideas. And so he would get frustrated with me, and we'd get into this like back and forth until finally he and I played a part in this. Like, I have responsibility, and he would get to the point where he would just put down his foot and say, you know what? I'm the CEO. We're going to do it my way, which like really pissed me off, but was also fair. Like, I was going in there and completely fumbling the entire conversation. And I remember leaving that room and just like crying in the bathroom because I was so upset. Cause I mean, I felt really disrespected, and like, it wasn't a good way for him to act either. And he did apologize like 5 minutes later. Yeah. He's like, I'm sorry, I was a dick. I shouldn't have said that. But
how did you move forward from that? And like, how did that change your relationship with him? And like, kind of, what were your next steps after a moment where you're like, obviously, like, oh man, that did not go at all how I wanted it to go?
I think I never quite solved that at that job. And probably part of the reason that I left was because I felt like I kind of topped out, like I didn't have any kind of room to grow. And part of that was because I didn't know how to talk about my ideas in a way that made them seem like good ideas. So then he would have that idea 6 months later, and I would be really upset because I had spent 6 months like working on all this stuff, and then I was going to have to go back and rework all of it and not get any acknowledgement for the fact that I had already said that we should do that 6 months ago. So I don't know. I mean, I think in that situation, it was really helpful. Like, I was really close with my boss. Like, we also, everybody in that company, it was like a small startup. We would all hang out all the time outside of work. And so my PM, who had also been in the room, came and kind of quietly knocked on the bathroom door and was like, hey, are you okay? I'm really sorry that it went that way. Like, he was clearly really pissed off about something else. Like, he overreacted, and he kind of like talked me down from the ledge in a way to say, like, I know that like he put that on you, but that shouldn't have gone onto you, sort of saying, and helping show me that it wasn't like a personal thing. It wasn't like a personal vendetta against me. And I've saw that later working with junior designers, where I was kind of on the other side of that and could more easily distance myself from criticism or negative feedback or people just not liking my idea. And then being able to sit down and have conversations with junior designers who were struggling with that. Like, I remember somebody had copied and pasted from another person's sketch file and then used pieces of the work and like presented it when we went around the room doing kind of a design critique. And the designer whose work had been copied was super pissed off and was taking it really personally. She's like, she hates me. She did it because she doesn't like me, and like all this stuff. And I just kind of had to say, look, we're all on the same team. Like, if I see something in your file that serves my idea, I'm going to take it also, because we're all doing this in service of the project. And
that means there's something good.
that means there's something good if they're copying
it. If they're taking it from you, that means you did something.
Right.
And you might not even be able to articulate what it is
yet. Exactly. And like, maybe I have like a rough idea that I haven't quite figured out, but somebody else saw something and it sparked an idea for them. And so they can take it and run with it in a different way. And just that kind of like ownership that we have around our, that it's like our egos get in the way and it's like, no, this is my work, but it's not. We're all getting paid.
Right.
Like that
to do something
belongs else. To the client or right. to the company that you work for. And so if someone else on your team takes it, like it's fine.
That's awesome.
So those like small little kind of moments where we take things personally, if you can just take a step back and try and like see if it's your ego that's getting in the way or if like somebody really genuinely wronged you. 'Cause like 90% of the drama that I saw with the junior designers was like definitely the former, less than the latter.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because I mean, it's also not a bad thing to have your feelings hurt.
Right.
I mean, going in the bathroom and crying because something didn't go well is not a bad thing. But then being able to analyze why and like what just happened there, I think is a really critical skill. And being able to say, was that something, was I not communicating? Did I not, was I not able to find the words to communicate? Like what, why did we just get to that
right.
point? And was that just that person being a total jerk?
I think that actually touches on something that I think is more interesting, which there is a book that I heard about and I don't remember what it's called, but it basically talks about how negative emotions are things that we tend to run away from. You know, if I'm feeling jealous, I don't want to feel jealous. And I also don't want to admit to anybody else that I'm feeling jealous. And so I'm going to kind of shut it down and try and ignore it as best I can. And the premise of this book was that all of these feelings that we view as negative are signals that can teach us and that we can learn from. And they're trying to tell us something. But the more we shut them down, the less we're able to like connect with whatever it is that that's trying to tell us. And so I think something I've been like working on the last year or so is like not turning those off or not trying to run away from those and just getting more comfortable kind of sitting in that discomfort and be like, okay, that didn't go so well. What happened? Like, why am I feeling bad about this? What part of this should I have taken responsibility for? Like in that conversation with my boss, like, yeah, he overreacted, but for me to walk away from that and just be like, he's an asshole, he shouldn't have done that, means I walk away with nothing.
Right.
Like I walk away feeling wronged. So if anything, I walk away with less. But if I can walk away from that conversation and say, that did not go well. Yeah, he overreacted, but I think he was frustrated with me because it's not the first time I've walked into that room unprepared. Okay, like in what ways am I unprepared? And then how can I work on those things? Then I walk away with like a ton of understanding and lessons and kind of things that can benefit me in the future.
Yeah.
So
that's so like being able to like dig in and analyze like that, like yourself. I don't think we can do that until we're like able to say like, yeah, I have the negative feeling.
Right.
I'm feeling like, I feel like shit. Like that day, that whole day was just a shit day. Why?
Yeah.
Or like that presentation didn't go well, or, you know, whatever it is, being able to like figure out part of that is huge.
Yeah. And it's a balance because like being Eeyore also sucks wherever, you know, everything is like, oh, I messed up. Why? And like to figure out how to like learn from our negative feelings without getting totally swept up in them and like trapped.
Right.
I think is also,
I mean, having other people, it sounds like you've been in multiple places where you were in a place where you had other people that were able to help you process that a little bit too. And say, yes, that person was out of line, or, hey, here's ways that you can express yourself better.
Yeah.
And having other people that can kind of walk you through that sounds like it's really helpful too. And to help you kind of understand, like, am I, it's basically to help you process through victim mentality,
right?
Or is this, no, this is a problem inside of our organization, but this is the exact reason why I was hired.
Yeah.
And there's a really fine line between those that I think a lot of people kind of miss.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, like, yeah, this was not a good situation.
Right.
And that's why I've been hired to come in here and kind of help this thing go a little bit more smoothly next time.
Well, and I think something that happens too in a lot of everywhere I've worked is like we'll get these little like gossip circles forming mm-hmm. where we all just get together and talk shit mm-hmm. about someone or something. Or
which is so much fun.
Which is so much fun. And I do think it's necessary because having a common enemy helps bond people
yeah.
in a very real way. But I also think it's important to have somebody that you can go to that's a sounding board, mm-hmm. that knows the context, that knows the people. Like, you know, if it's a work issue, then hopefully somebody that you can work with.
Mm-hmm.
That you can go. I mean, I do this all the time with my sister in my personal life mm-hmm. when like I'll have a dispute, say with my roommate, and I'm not quite sure if like I'm being selfish or like which of our versions is the right one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just tell my sister like, hey, you're the most fair and generous person I know. Will you tell me, is this a reasonable like discussion for me to be having, or am I genuinely just being selfish?
Mm-hmm.
And she'll tell me like, no, actually you're just being selfish, or no, I think you're like totally in the right for having this, you know, wanting to have a discussion about this. And so it's really helpful for me to like know that there's this person that I trust in this arena. So when I'm kind of muddling my way through, I can just ask that person and it's like a lighthouse.
I feel like that's what sisters like are. You can always trust a sister to be able to tell you like, no, you're being selfish.
Yeah, exactly. But at work, like I've always had those people at everywhere I've worked.
Yeah.
Where awesome. They're going to be honest with you, but they also know the dynamics at play.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So maybe word of warning, not too much gossip. Find someone to have constructive gossip with.
Constructive gossip is good. It's called a sounding board.
Exactly.
Not constructive gossip. It's just called gossip. Awesome. Thank you, Louisa. These are awesome. Where can people find you if they want to find more information about you?
I'm on Dribbble.
Dribbble.
And Facebook.
And Facebook.
I guess. I don't know. Don't find me on Facebook. I don't like it when strangers.
Yes, we aren't going to say what that is. Dribbble. Louisa Monsetta.
Yeah, I think it's Louisa MF. I'm on Twitter, but I don't really use it. Or people can just email me, louisa.mansera@gmail.com.
Love it. Last thing I like to ask everybody, you're currently at Envision. Is Envision hiring? If there are some young designers that want to spend a little bit of time with you as their sounding board, Envision hiring?
Yes. I'm pretty sure we're always hiring. Although right now we are specifically looking for a really, really, really good brand designer.
Awesome.
For the marketing team, not product.
There you go. I didn't know that. Because it seemed like it was all...
As of like 2 days ago.
Cool. Brand designers at Envision. Cool. And if they want to do that, they can shoot you an email or they can check the Envision job board, something like that.
Yeah, either one works.
Cool. This has been awesome. Louisa, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
This has been super, super fun to chat with you a little bit. So this is great.
So that was my interview with Louisa. I'm so grateful to her for coming on the show and opening up and sharing some of her personal experiences. I hope you found them really insightful and helpful. I know I really appreciated being able to chat with her. And just a quick reminder that you can follow along on Twitter by following Not Craft Podcast, or you can just follow me directly, Joshua N. Taylor. It's Twitter, anywhere, Instagram, all those places. I'd love your feedback on the format. Anything else that you would like to hear more of, less of, people that you would like to talk to, anything like that, I would love to hear it. And you can also follow along on Patreon. You can get some of those special interviews with my two daughters. We'd love to have you support us and be a part of the crew. Look forward to hearing more from you. If you want to do that on Patreon, it's patreon.com/notcraftpodcast. Thanks, and we'll catch you around for the next one.